Standard Bank Chief Economist and Head of Research Gulam Balim participated in the Financial Times Global Boardroom, focusing on strategies for a world transformed by crisis. Gulam featured in the session framer on Africa, how quickly can it bounce back? He was interviewed by Financial Times journalist David Peeling. Here he shares his views on the prospects for Africa and South Africa in 2021 and beyond.
Gulam, thanks so much for joining us. I'd just like to get a kind of an overall picture to start with. It has been said that with the exception of South Africa and perhaps some North African states, the impact, the health impact of the pandemic has been perhaps less severe on the continent, but paradoxically, the economic impact has been even more severe. Would you say that that is a broad summation of the picture as you see it?
David, that is a very reasonable characterization of COVID-19 and the socioeconomic and economic consequences over the last couple of quarters. Now, it is true that against the backdrop of Africa housing about 17% of humanity, the share of global COVID-19 infections and even fatalities is less than 5%. In other words, Africa's share is a fraction of its population share. And that, I think, does assert and reinforce your suggestion that COVID-19 has not been as piercing. And we would argue that one of the reasons that has provided this relative shield is the youthfulness of Africans. More than half of Africans are under the age of 20, roughly 6% are older than 60 years of age. So with a median age under 20 years, that has provided a degree of resilience, a degree of shield, a degree of immunity, especially from harmful COVID-19 disease, as well as fatalities. But I think we take lesson from India that one cannot let one's guard down. And even if only 5% of Africans are over the age of 60, and we know age is a significant determinant of severe disease and fatalities, 5% of 1.2 billion people is still an astonishingly large number that can burden the health infrastructure enormously. So, of course, the vaccination drives will remain significant and can't come soon enough.
And yet the economic impact has been, as I say, almost paradoxically more severe than the first continent-wide recession in 25 years, an end to, you know, what we've seen of 20 years of pretty fast growth on the continent overall.
David, the economic smash is less a function of the direct consequences of COVID-19 and more of a result of the lockdowns combined with weaker exports, especially during the middle part of last year. So the lockdowns were really the reason for the vast and deep economic suppression through many markets. In other words, or at least we would argue, two-thirds of economic contraction was attributed to the lockdowns and the manner in which they suppressed both supply side and demand side functions, and at times weaker exports, especially to Europe. And you will recall moments last year when commodity prices were also somewhat weaker. So those were the two primary channels through which the African economy, sub-Saharan Africa, was more weighed under. Since then, of course, we've seen commodity prices become slightly more elevated, and that has provided some degree of export tonics, combined with the fact that governments have been more pragmatic in the nature of their lockdown. So we've avoided harsh lockdowns that were more prevalent last year, and that too has allowed for a degree of economic resurgence.
And the impact's been uneven, hasn't it? I mean, you've seen big economies like South Africa, Angola, Nigeria really suffer a lot. You've seen other economies, and perhaps not so dependent on oil, have proved more resilient. Some have even managed to grow a bit this year, or last year in 2020, and certainly this year, 2021.
So, David, we know that the continent is quite heterogeneous, and in that underlying makeup, the distribution of pain has similarly been varied. So those tourism economies, of course, have been mired most. They may be small, but they've suffered materially last year, and 2021 will feel very much like last year for those economies. The oil-dependent economies, and you highlighted Nigeria, and of course, Angola on the western shelf of the continent, with oil prices having fallen so significant last year, and despite them rising more than 50% more recently, those economies will still remain generally weak and growing at a very low single digit. Angola, for instance, has experienced a recession for 5 years, and I think it may end up flirting again with recession this year or just grow mildly. Then, of course, there are the non-oil but still resource-dependent economies, and those two were mired last year, but because of the one can call perhaps frothy commodities markets now, they're enjoying some degree of re-engagement in terms of the economic tonic coming from commodity prices. But what we also saw was resilience, especially from those nations that are on the eastern shelf of the continent. And we know that for at least two decades, they've had less volatility. So put simply, those non-resource dependent economies or resource light economies have been resilient through 2020 and will probably show fairly robust performance in the ensuing quarters.
We're talking about the Kenyas, the Ethiopias, the Rwandas, I guess, there. I want to turn to debt, if I may, because we don't have too much time remaining. I mean, as we moved into the pandemic crisis, there had already been rumblings that debt levels had got too high, that there'd been a lot of spending on infrastructure, a lot of borrowing from China and other multilateral providers, bilateral providers, and that this has been exacerbated by the pandemic, partly because GDP has stalled. We saw Zambia default. We've seen other restructurings in places like Ethiopia. Do we now have a fully fledged debt crisis coming down the track?
Not fully fledged, but some markets are experiencing more acute indebtedness and debt servicing pain than others. And you're correct, since the indebtedness relief programs of the late 90s and 2000s, early 2000s, in several countries have really seen a debt swell, and also on commercial terms, which tends to be a little less, a little less liberal in its terms. We would perhaps think about those tier one countries where the strain is most severe, that face imminent default or perhaps require severe restructuring. And one could perhaps place Ethiopia and Zambia, as you mentioned, within that bucket. Then there's perhaps a tier two level of countries that have delayed fiscal consolidation but are experiencing severe debt servicing pain. And here I think about Kenya, Ghana, Namibia, as examples, and perhaps also Mozambique. And in that respect, these nations can still access capital markets, foreign capital markets, for that matter, but will require consolidation. The array of debt relief initiatives, whether it is through the multilaterals or through the mechanism of special drawing rights, this is going to have to be an essential feature of recalibrating the debt profile. Because quite simply, over the last two decades, the continent has been able to muster fairly elevated growth, sub-Saharan Africa at near 5% per year. The debt burden, even if reasonably resolved, will probably mean that medium-term growth trend will be between 3 and 4% at best.
You mentioned that 5% growth for 20 years, which has breathed a degree of optimism into the kind of the Pan-African story. Of course, one mustn't talk about Africa really, because, you know, there are 54, 55 countries. But insofar as we can, you know, will there be a pre-pandemic and a post-pandemic? Has this stopped that growth story? Will economies manage to recover? Are the drivers of that growth, are they still in place, and will they still be in place once we recover from this, you know, exogenous shock?
David, so I think you make reference to the structural features, and there, I think there is reason for optimism. So, you know, at Standard Bank, we've identified at least five structural drivers, and I would argue they remain largely intact. So population growth, or the sheer scale of African population, which is a significant ingredient into the growth formula, remains a significant underpin. Urbanization remains in force, and of course, the agglomeration effects of cities provide a significant foundation stone for growth. There's resource abundance and still very buoyant demand, and we think that will provide not an end in itself, but robust near to medium term growth and growth spillovers. The fourth item I would mention is financial services deepening, shifting cash markets to credit markets, and just technological financial services deepening is creating more livelier economic activity. And the last item, which of course is well worn and and well understood. Technological deepening. Some people would prefer to use the description of leapfrogging, which I'm a little bit reluctant to cling to too generally. But the idea of the e-commerce economy, online activity, just generally services being increasingly infused with technological prowess speaks enormously to the structural foundations, which in fact we think will underpin the 3-4% trend rate of growth path over the coming decade.
In about the minute that we've got remaining, can I turn just to the big economy, or one of the big economies on the continent, South Africa? Mm-hmm. I mean, briefly, you know, we have a new president, or a newish president, Cyril Ramaphosa. After many years of very sluggish growth in per capita terms, actually the country going kind of backwards, really. Has South Africa turned a corner politically, and therefore can it turn a corner economically in the years ahead?
I think so. I think the turning of that corner has been decisive with the institutional rebuilding that is already taking place. And as you alluded to, you know, South Africa's institutional fabric was gutted by the previous administration. It will take time, but the president has shown clear resolve. And as you suggest, bolting onto the institutional rebuild, which I would argue is already fairly apace, macroeconomic reforms are increasingly beginning to be unleashed. So I do think that the next 10 years will show marked turn of trend relative to the last 10 years. And I think perhaps the epicenter of that optimism is rooted in my belief that President Cyril Ramaphosa will prevail, that he continues to strengthen in terms of his grip on the party. And I think he will be a two-term president up until 2029, therefore and thereby being able to continue to progress with the institutional rebuild and the macroeconomic reform agenda, which admittedly has been pedestrian thus far, but I think will show increasing momentum in the ensuing years.
Thank you, Gulam. We're going to leave it there on that optimistic note. Thanks very much for joining us. Please join us in a moment for our panel discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
That was Gulam Balam, Chief Economist and Head of Research at Standard Bank Group, unpacking the African continent's prospects in the aftermath of the pandemic.
Standard Bank. It can be. Standard Bank is an authorized financial services and registered credit provider.